Hello and welcome to another episode of Merc the Meek, where I talk about RPGs, games, whatever. And before I start talking about martial arts, I would like to talk about the most important thing I'm ever going to talk about on this podcast. And that is the fact that pickleball is overblown and overrated. It is annoying to chase that ball, and you think you know the physics of it, and then, nope, it changes directions, or it doesn't bounce as high as you think it would, and you're just left frustrated. But this might be me talking in ignorance. I've only played it a little bit. The girls seem to love it, but I'm not impressed. They don't know that much about tennis or racquetball, though, so they have nothing to compare against, I suppose. Regardless, let's get on with something tabletop-related. So I have two call-ins concerning karate. The first one is from Joe Richter from Hindsightless, and the second is Daniel from Bandit's Keep. But I think we'll only have time, really, to talk about Joe's call-in, and we'll save Daniel's for another episode.
Yo, Merc, just got finished listening to your latest episode about the history karate and RPGs and stuff, and that was awesome, man. That was a really cool listen. I loved hearing about, you know, the broad strokes of the history of karate. Really, really fascinating stuff. So yeah, let's run through your experiment, your thought experiments real quick. For the first one, about the three masters who each have 2 years to train a student, and then the students have to face 10 untrained fighters and each other. I don't know. I think Shotokan might have the best chance there, because I think they probably have the best chance of the combination of having a fighter make it through all 2 years of the training and then also be able to handle themselves more effectively in a fight. Although if a student was able to get through the 2 years of training from the third dude, the pudgy dude who liked to fight and wanted everything the way it used to be, sounds kind of like Joe Rogan. Hopefully he's cooler than Joe Rogan. Anyway, if you could survive that dude's training for 2 years, yeah, I'd take that student against the 10 other untrained fighters and the two trained fighters, even the Shotokan guy. Then with the 10 years of training, you survive the 2 years. Now you're on your own to train for 10 more years. That's a tougher one. I don't know. I think I'd go with Shotokan. I think I'd pick the Shotokan because you practice some katas, not all of them by any stretch of the imagination, but a quarter of them roughly, and you're training more in the actual practical aspects of self-defense and combat. So yeah, I think I'd go with Shotokan.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. It is an interesting thought experiment as far as I'm concerned. Pressure testing a martial art is absolutely tantamount, I think. And yeah, if you don't have practical, like literally hands-on experience, your martial art is not going to be as effective. So getting in the reps, extremely important. You're going to do that with the fat pudgy guy who is choking Motobu. You're going to do that. Well, also, I got to back up a little bit here. The framing of that thought experiment isn't 100% historically accurate. Kenwa Mabuni was a big fan of all these kata, but he also believed in the hands-on experience. And I've got some quotes here from him, so let's dive into that real quick before we move on to what you have to say about Pathfinder. First off, Kenwa Mabuni gives kind of a subtle dig at Gichin Funakoshi, Shotokan, because he went to Japan from Okinawa, and as far as a lot of the Okinawans concerned, kind of sold out karate a little bit. So I'm going to put some more videos in the show notes. And also, real quick, Decahedron Joe sent me an email and said, hey, check out this BBC podcast on the history of Kung Fu. And it's actually the same podcast that I've mentioned, I don't know, half a year ago or so on Alexandre Dumas and like the Three Musketeers and whatnot. The podcast is You're Dead to Me, and I'll put a link to the one episode. It has the comedian Phil Wang in it, and you can see where my priorities are. I can't remember who the historian is, but I can certainly remember who the comedian on the episode is. So yeah, check that out if you're interested. And if I remember, I'll also put some YouTube videos of karate history in there. But what ended up happening was Japan was so interested in karate from Okinawa because they wanted an Eastern, you know, a homegrown analog for boxing. They saw that Western boxing was extremely popular, even in Japan, and they wanted something that could compete. When they saw demonstrations of karate in Okinawa, they wanted karate for its punches, but they also saw, oh, we've got kicks. So, hey, we can use this and say this is better than boxing because we've got punches and kicks. Judo was already growing and doing fine. That's the grappling aspect of things. So we don't need that. So when karate was coming to Japan, Gichin Funakoshi was downplaying the judo aspects and focusing on the punching and kicking aspects. So this is some of the context for Kenwa Mabuni's quote right here. The karate that has spread to Tokyo is incomplete. Those who believe that karate consists only of kicks and punches and think throws and joint locks are exclusive to judo or jiu-jitsu have been misinformed. We should have an open mind and strive to study the complete art. So we can start to see that Mabuni has a focus that's not just exclusively on kata. He's saying, hey, we need to be practicing joint locks and takedowns and throws and everything. So he is advocating a hands-on approach in his karate as well. And this is what he has to say specifically about kata. Regardless of how many kata you know, if your training is inadequate, they will be useless. And he also says, a kata is not fixed or immovable. Like water, it's ever-changing and fits itself to the shape of the vessel containing. However, kata is not some kind of beautiful competitive dance, but a grand martial art of self-defense, which determines life and death. So this will be interesting in light of the Pathfinder stuff that Joe will talk about soon. But you can see that even though Kenwa Mabuni loves kata, he collected them like Pokemon, I said last time. So, you know, there's basically in Chitoryu, there's about 100 or so kata to learn. He's saying if you just learn the motions, but you're not actually training what's going on with those motions, it's going to be useless. This is about self-defense, and life and death is on the line. So we're not trying to do a competitive dance. We're trying to learn some moves that will protect you from harm. And if you're not actually practicing the moves, it's going to be useless. So the thought experiment is a little bit unfair to Chitoryu. If you're truly practicing 100 kata and getting hands-on experience, like breaking down those kata and actually practicing the moves on both a compliant partner and then pressure testing them with resistance, then you are going to be an extremely effective martial artist. Because if you know the locks, the throws, the takedowns, the sweeps, along with the punches and the kicks, and if you knew all of the moves from 100 kata and could do them on a resistant opponent, I mean, you would be like undefeatable. But that takes a huge amount of time to develop that amount of skill. I mean, maybe if you're spending 5 years really breaking down a certain amount of kata and you're getting a lot of the principles behind those, let's say 10 kata, and those kata are varied enough to get some punches, kicks, throws, sweeps, locks, then as you go on, you get the principles, the exact details will probably come quicker. So it would speed up your understanding of all 100 kata, but still, to get it all is going to take a long investment of time. So if in the thought experiment you don't have access to the master anymore, and when I say you're training alone, that doesn't mean you can't borrow a willing partner to test the moves out on. If the Shitoryu Karateka could do that, then I think they'd be very well prepared after that 10-year gap to handle not only untrained fighters, but fighters from other systems as well. So I might put my money on Shitoryu in that consideration, but, you know, it's a thought experiment. Any answer could be valid depending on what your assumptions are. So thanks for participating in that, Joe. But what do you have to say about Pathfinder?
And then as far as RPGs and karate in Pathfinder, monks, yeah, the base class of monk is very much that Shaolin style. But in Pathfinder, every class has what's called archetypes that you can choose, which are just small tweaks to the class. They take away some class abilities and give you other class abilities to give the base classes more of a feat, more of flavor, if you want to go that way. And I haven't actually counted or anything, but just from like looking, I am pretty sure monks have the most different archetypes because there are so many flavors of martial arts that people like. And so I think, yeah, it's, you know, I think Pathfinder does it really, really well because you can absolutely, there are a few archetypes for the monk where it is pure, like there, I think there's one called Kata Master. There's one called Tatori, which is what Jason played in our Wrath of the Righteous campaign. And that's all about grappling. Like you can't do much else other than grapple. Once you get them grappled, you can do some stuff. But yeah, the Tatori is all about grappling. There's like the open hand master, the martial art, just a class just called, or an archetype called the martial artist. I love Pathfinder, but yeah. And monk is one of, if not my, well, no, it's not my most favorite class, but it's in my top three favorite classes in Pathfinder because I love martial arts so much. I've been watching ninja movies and kung fu movies ever since I was a kid. I've taken a smattering of different martial arts. I've taken karate, taekwondo, aikido, and jiu-jitsu. You know, never diving deep into any of those. Taekwondo, I probably went the furthest in, and that's when I was, you know, in like 7th, 8th grade. Maybe a little bit into high school too, now that I think about it. But yeah, after freshman year, I didn't do any martial arts anymore. It was all football all the way. Anyway, man, boo to football. You take it easy, dude. I'll talk to you soon. Have an awesome day. Peace out.
Thanks again, Joe. Once you sent in the message, I started looking into Pathfinder a little bit. Now, I haven't played Pathfinder 1, but I really enjoyed Pathfinder 2 back in the COVID era when my mom came to live with us and we would play online with my brother and sister and, you know, had like a little family game. My mom was willing to play a ranger. I think it was a dual-wielding ranger, and she sat there knitting while we would play, and then I would, you know, ask her what she would like to do at certain times, and she'd give us some feedback. She was very low commitment there, you know, barely in it, maybe a little bit. I think she was definitely humoring us, but it was still fun to play with the family and to include her, and she did have some fun, epic moments with those critical hits and everything. So that's a fun experience that I will remember. Rest in peace, Mom. Anyway, regardless, it was fun also looking into the Kata Master, as you mentioned. It seems like Paizo carried over the same archetype structure from Pathfinder 1 into Pathfinder 2. So it's almost like you've got the monk, and then when you take an archetype, you're switching out some of the features from the monk class with another class. So in the case of the Kata Master, you're changing some of the aspects of it to the swashbuckling class. And the swashbuckler is more of a charisma-based, flashy sword fighter character, doing some acrobatics and tumbling and whatnot. So it makes for an interesting combination. So all of the information for Pathfinder is online because of the OGL at the Archives of Nethys website. And I'll try to remember to put a link in there. But this comes from the Kata Master entry. The Kata Master takes the visual aspect of his martial art to its logical extreme, harnessing her flowing movements and skilled maneuvers as a psychological weapon against her enemies. A Kata Master forsakes the mental discipline of her more contemplative brethren in favor of these flamboyant exhibitions. She often performs in staged fights and tournaments, utilizing stylized forms to amaze the audience and shock and dismay her opponents. So swashbucklers get panache points that they can spend to do certain things. So when you take this archetype, you get a couple of things from the swashbuckler. You get Daring Do, which allows you, I think if you spend a panache point, to add a d6 to like acrobatic dex type rolls, whether that's tumbling or, you know, acrobatics in general, or I think even like swimming and, you know, going across narrow spaces, those type of things. You also get dodging panache. So if you're attacked, you can move 5 feet and kind of readjust yourself while you're still going to get attacked, but you can put yourself in a more advantageous position. And this leads me to another Kenwa Mabuni quote, because when you're talking about kata, usually the first thing you do in a kata is you either turn to the left or to the right. And that gets misunderstood a lot of times in modern karate practices. But this is what Kenwa Mabuni has to say. The meaning of the directions in kata is not well understood, and frequently mistakes are made in the interpretation of kata movements. In extreme cases, it is sometimes heard that this kata moves in 8 directions, so it is designed for fighting 8 opponents, or some such nonsense. When interpreting kata, one must not get too caught up in these directions. For example, do not fall into the trap of thinking that just because a kata begins to the left, that the opponent is always attacking from the left. The 5 pinon kata show us that against an attack from the front, we can evade either left or right to put ourselves in the most advantageous position to defend ourselves. And the 5 pinon kata, or heian kata in Shotokan, are going to be the, like, in most styles, are going to be the first 5 kata that you learn. They're kind of the basic kata. And I won't get into more details, I guess, than that. But basically, like, positioning and footwork is just as important as punches and kicks and throws and everything else in the system. So I like that one of the first things you get from this archetype based on kata is the ability to maneuver, to put yourself in a better position during a fight. And I'll try to speed up some of the other stuff here quick and wrap this up. But you also get menacing swordplay from the swashbuckler class, which allows you to like intimidate or demoralize your opponent as you're attacking. Another thing you get at 7th level is a targeted strike. So you can select body points like head, chest, arms, legs, and then you can apply another effect. Like, and I guess in some cases you might not do damage, but you may do some damage and knock your opponent prone, or, you know, you might stun your opponent, etc., with that targeted strike. So I think that fits the stereotype of karate a little bit. But the last swashbuckling feat you get at level 15 is dizzying defense. But for a kata master, I don't think that fits very well. I know it's probably a little ironic that kata are about self-defense, but they really aren't very defensive at all. The thought is, if you are up close and personal and somebody is meaning to harm you, you know, if you were farther away, you'd just try to get away. You'd use your voice, you'd use other means of keeping the enemy at bay, attracting attention, etc. But if the enemy is right on top of you, now it's go time. So you don't want to be reactive, which blocking is, trying to discern where this attack is coming from and, you know, either parry or cover. You want to go all in on defense so that you're making your opponent react so that you can act. So first thing you're doing, moving to the left or right in the kata, is you're trying to position yourself in that advantageous position, and then you attack and attack and attack until the enemy either runs away or is incapacitated somehow. So you don't find much actual like defensive moves in kata. We could talk about blocks. We should talk about blocks at some point. That is more of the modernization of karate. The term uke does not mean block, it means receive. So yeah, this is a rabbit hole we could go down. But instead of dizzying defense from the swashbuckler, I would probably choose perfect thrust. At 15th level, while the swashbuckler has at least one panache point, she can, as a full round action, make a perfect thrust, pooling all of her attack potential into a single melee attack made with a light or one-handed piercing melee weapon. In the case of being the monk archetype, you could also use a monk weapon or bare hand. And they make the attack against the target's touch AC, ignoring all damage reduction. I think that fits that aggressive attacking strategy when the time comes. But it's also kind of the same as the targeted strike to some degree. So I don't know, maybe that's why they didn't go for it. But those are just my thoughts on the whole Pathfinder Kata Master class. Overall, I love it. I would definitely play it if I was to play Pathfinder 1 as a monk. I would want to try that archetype out and go from there. So yeah, those are my thoughts. Thank you, Joe, for sharing it. Kind of makes me want to get back into a crunchy RPG. And we're going to be talking about AD&D soon. I don't think in this episode it's running a little long, but Daniel called in to talk about AD&D. So I'm curious about that as well. But I'm going to have to leave you hanging on that just because this is running long and life happens. But yeah, thank you all for listening and take care.